When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome back to the flagship show of ESSR's network. It's ESSR Central. My name's Ross McLeod, joined once again by Scott McLeod, reviewing Impact Wrestling Part 2, WWE releases, WWE's new signings, The Rock, and so much more. Scott, it's nice that these stories are starting to break more regularly before Central and not after it.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Impact Part 2 and the two big shows we got coming up this weekend, I think we already had enough from our plate, even if it was a slow news week. But, you know, WWE dropped yet another unexpected release on us, and they said these are just dropping right into your lap.
Yep. So, that being said, we talked about we've got enough on our plate. We've also got enough in our back catalogue to keep you listening for hours on end. Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet on iTunes, Spotify, and all good Android podcasting sites. The return of the feature shows is coming soon. Myself, Scott, Daniel, and David recorded a Bray Wyatt look back yesterday, and that'll be on the site in the next few weeks. We've also got profiles on Roddy Piper coming up. That'll be next month. SDL's there, New Japan stuff from East meets West. Articles are returning to the site. We are going to be doing more articles if you fancy a wee read there. I've just finished writing Missed the Boat, five times WWE Missed the Boat with the recently released talents, who we will be talking about later on. You can find that at eatsleepsuplexretweet.com, and there you can find all the links to our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, we're on it, at Suplex Retweet. Right, as I grab a breath there, Scott, would you like to talk about the WWE releases?
Might as well while we're here.
I might as well. We'll cover it. So it was last Wednesday, I believe.
Last Thursday,
last week. WWE had announced record profits, a mega show in Australia. The Elimination Chamber is coming to Perth, Australia, February 24th. And yeah, things were looking up for WWE. Talent had been told that there would be no layoffs on the talent roster side. There had been over 100 layoffs within UFC and WWE due to the TKO merger. However, they announced a few talents would be getting let go from their contracts. Some of the names on that list: Mustafa Ali, Dolph Ziggler, Shelton Benjamin, Mace, Mansoor, Emma, Dana Brooke, Riddick Moss, Matt Riddle, which I think was the big surprise for everyone there, and a few more. Top Dollar as well, Michael Cole's favourite wrestler, and a handful of NXT wrestlers were also released from their contracts. Scott, thoughts on the releases? Who to you sticks out in that list as a, oh God, why did they let him go?
Well, it was surprising to hear of like releases on the talent side, even though people had worried this was coming for a while. You know, thankfully we'd not had to talk about it as frequently as we did back in like say 2021 time, where it seemed to be almost every couple of months we had a big list of people getting released. But for most of them, like, I don't think it was a surprise that a lot of them got let go, because I don't think they were doing much on like TV, and for most of them you'd probably see some great opportunities for them outside of WWE. The fact that they're still doing the deal with Saudi Arabia and Mansoor has been let go is still surprising, because apparently he even talked about, like, yeah, the reason he couldn't lose a lot on TV, which is why he was rarely used, because of the Saudi deal and everything. So they couldn't have him lose, and they weren't going to really push him outside of the Saudi shows. They weren't going to use him. So also Dolph Ziggler, because not because he was doing anything notable on TV, he hadn't been on in months, but it's just the fact that he seemed like one of those people who would be there forever, you know, because like his opportunity to go seemed like it was like years ago. So if he didn't go then, he was probably never going to leave. And that was proven otherwise last Thursday.
Yeah, I agree. I think we had talked about this. I'm a strong believer that I think WWE dropped the ball multiple times with Dolph Ziggler. I think multiple times they had a chance, even if it wasn't as the top guy, especially after that Miz feud in 2016 over the Intercontinental Championship, the title v career match, when WWE champions and world champions and universal champions were being more and more part-time. Someone like Dolph Ziggler in the main event picture as Intercontinental Champion could have done great things while the WWE Champion or the Universal Champion, whatever brand he was on, was off TV. So he's someone I'm gutted he's gone, but at the same time, he seemed very disenfranchised. He came back, you know, whenever needed, you know, had a wee run in NXT. He has had runs since that 2016 feud with the Miz. You know, he's had a couple of IC title runs, a US title run, three runs with the tag titles and that NXT title run, but it got to the point where the fans stopped caring, and that's a dangerous place to get. And he seemed happy doing other stuff. He seemed happy doing his stand-up and doing his financial stuff. So hopefully he still does that. Hopefully we still see him in wrestling, because I think he has a lot more still to give. Someone, I think, as well, who still has a lot left to give, despite being 48 years old, Shelton Benjamin. Another one who brought back at the start of the brand split in 2016. He was then injured. He then made his debut in 2017. Didn't really do much in the first 3 years of his contract. Then the Hurt Business started. And I think a lot of people were quite upset that the Hurt Business didn't go the distance. You know, there were so many more avenues left to discover. And yeah, just a bit frustrating bringing Benjamin back to not do anything with him.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to see him go back to Japan, because he was doing a lot of stuff over years between his WWE runs. Like, he went over to New Japan. He and MVP formed a tag team. He joined the Suzuki-gun faction, had some tag title success in New Japan and in pro wrestling, you know, with the likes of Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. I definitely think he's a guy who, despite his age, can still go. So somewhere like there, or even popping up indies here and there, he would still have a lot to offer. And like I said, I just, well, given memories of Shelton Benjamin, his initial pushes when the IC title scene back in the Ruthless Aggression, I have memories of that. It was particularly sad for me to watch him, you know, kind of being underutilized, especially after the Hurt Business was just so abruptly stopped. Mustafa Ali is another one. Like, his release kind of kicked this all off, and initial reports by Sean Rossett said that it was unconnected to the releases, so I'm wondering if it was a case of Ali heard about the releases coming and used this as his opportunity to get out, because for over a year now we've heard stories that he was unhappy and he's trying to make the best with the whole positive Ali thing. He got the IC title shot. He was doing stuff with Dom. He was even scheduled to fight Dom this Saturday at No Mercy for the North American title, and reports came out recently that higher-ups in NXT, and by higher-ups I'm assuming they just mean Shawn Michaels, weren't happy that they let Dom go white when they were doing the storyline, because I'm sure now that means if I had to scramble with the North American title, which is probably why there was a random North American title match on Raw this week.
Yeah, Mustafa Ali seemed to be having a pretty solid run in NXT recently. And the Miss the Boat article that's coming soon to the website, I talked about how he had a pretty solid run in 205 Live from its inception up until 2019. You know, he was the number two babyface consistently. He had a good run there. He had a WrestleMania title match, never quite got to the championship, but then he gets moved to the main roster and he pins Daniel Bryan on his first night, and it never really improved from there. He gets injured before the Elimination Chamber. Kofi Mania happens, and then the rest is history. Unfortunately, I'd like to see Ali go to Impact with the X Division. I'm sure there'll be many a rumour of people going to AEW, New Japan, Impact Wrestling. Who would you like to see pop up where? And is there any matches that maybe pique your interest in these promotions?
I think Emma, who got released, formerly Tina Dash, would, you know, I think her going back to Impact would be cool. It didn't feel like that long ago since she left Impact, actually, which is why I said in our little central chat she should do a George Costanza and just show up to Impact and pretend she never left. So, like, oh, no, I've been waiting for you guys to pick me for the last 6 months. I was just waiting by the phone. But her go back, and as soon as she goes there, maybe Riddick Moss will go with her, or maybe he'll go do a Matt Cardona go along the Indies, because Matt Cardona was trying to send some encouragement to what this could mean for the release of the results. We've seen how he's taken the ball and run with it. Mustafa Ali to Impact, I also agree with. Ziggler, I think if he goes anywhere wrestling-wise, he might go AEW out of all of them, because his brother's there. His brother seemed to tease that he had interest in these two forming some sort of partnership over in AEW. Shelton, for selfish reasons, I'd kind of like to see him go over to Japan again, because I had this weird fantasy booking in my head, because there's the group Just Five Guys, which is Sanada and four former members of the Suzuki-gun faction, and now recently Kanemaru, the bastard, left the group, betrayed them to join House of Torture. So part of me wants to see Shelton go over there and be the new fifth guy in Just Five Guys, because he was in the same group as like three of the guys that are in there, because I just think that would be a weird group, because it's a weird group already in New Japan, but that's just my theory. But most of them can't do any booking wise till I think the 20th of December.
Yeah, I think if you see anyone pop up anywhere, it will be on the Indies for now. I think 2024 is when you might see these guys again. But, yeah, I'm sorry, you go.
I gotta just also say a couple of things. One, I feel the worst, weirdly, for Marseille and Mansoor, especially when you watch the clips from Mace's Twitch stream, where they've talked about the ideas and everything. How basically, Vince was so behind everything. LA Knight pretty much took his frustrations for the gimmick out on them. Triple H pretty much didn't care for them as soon as he took over, because it wasn't one of his, an idea he was into. And so those two kind of suffered the brunt of it. Like, the fact that they didn't know who Maxxine Dupri was going to be before. Like, they thought it was going to be Tiffany Stratton, and then it was someone else up until like an hour or so before the day of her debut. So those two I really feel bad for. But I heard a story about, in terms of, like, you talk about like TKO and the stock and how everything was going well and the announcement about Perth and everything. The stock apparently for TKO took a bit of a dip when there was the announcement about SmackDown potentially moving to USA, which also could mean a different night. So that means the end of the partnership with Fox. So apparently the stock took a bit of a dip, and apparently every time there's been mass releases the last couple of years, the stock has went up a little bit afterwards. So a bit of a conspiracy theory has been going around that maybe WWE, even though they said they wouldn't do releases from the actual active roster, maybe they did this to help boost their stock back up again.
That is interesting. And yeah, you talk about Mason Mansoor, another releasee, Rick Boogs, said that Vince McMahon was massively behind him, and basically said the removal of Vince McMahon basically killed my WWE career. So there was people who did benefit from Vince McMahon being in charge. However, when Triple H came in and brought in his own guys, it seemed that a lot of that went downhill rather quickly. Good luck to everyone. You know, it's never nice to see anyone lose their job. Specifically, very harsh on Emma, who posted about the Perth announcement of Elimination Chamber. A dream come true, can't wait, and then just posted later on, never mind, I've been released. And it was just like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing, it's not even funny. It was one of those ones that were just, oh my God, that is horrible.
If you just want to give her a hug, like, I'm sorry, Hen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but as you said, back to Impact, the Knockouts division is looking pretty thin over there. And yeah, it could use a bit of a spruce up. Speaking of Impact Wrestling, couple of contracts coming up in Impact. PW Insider reporting that Sami Callihan is reporting to leave Impact Wrestling when his contract expires at the end of the month, September 30th, as both sides cannot agree on a new deal. As of now, there's interest from other companies for not just as an in-ring talent, but for a producer slash agent. Pat Lepardi is reporting that PCO has given notice to Impact Wrestling and will be leaving the company when his contract expires on October 30th. And apparently Fightful reports that Deanna Purrazzo's contract with Impact Wrestling is ending in 2024 with no renewal in sight. So it looks like three people leaving Impact Wrestling: Sami Callihan, PCO, Deanna Purrazzo. Let's talk about PCO first, because he's god-awful, but you know, at least if he's a monster, you could use him for Halloween, and he's leaving on October 30th. He can't do anything right.
Yeah, I remember when I seen that report and everything, like, oh, God, no, not PCO. Anyway, on with the day.
Yeah, let's move on. let's not give him any more airtime. Sami Callihan, got a lot of airtime for Impact when it wasn't getting a lot of airtime. The draw gimmick being part of being the Impact Wrestling World Champion, his feud with Tessa Blanchard, the Deathmatch King stuff, Ohio versus Everybody, a lot of good stuff there. However, he's not done a lot recently. Pardon me. Aside from maybe a bit of a throwaway feud with the Design. He's with them, he's not with them. He's against them, he's not against them. Oh, he's turned on him when he's back with OVE. You know, it's not been a lot, and considering there has been interest in him from AEW before, I can't blame him if he's going that far down the card to maybe look elsewhere at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did seem to be somebody who flew the flag for Impact for, you know, the whole time he'd been there. I think he joined about 2017 because the two Chris brothers who were part of OVE were there first, and then he kind of joined them and formed it as a kind of a trio in 2017. It was in a period when the Global Force Gold stuff was still fresh and everything, and all that failed stuff with the merger and everything was still fresh. So going to Impact was not seen as the more desirable option, but he kept flying the flag for it. He got a lot of attention for them and stuff that he was doing, because like from 2018 to 2020, a lot of the stuff people were talking about with Impact Wrestling used to probably resolve around him, you know, stuff with Eddie Edwards and their feud, stuff with Tessa Blanchard, Brian Cage, the stuff when he was world champion, everything. Like, the thing with Eddie Edwards, just as Impact was starting to build some momentum again under Scott D'Amore and Don Callis, there was that spot where he was meant to hit like a chair with a baseball bat into the face of Eddie Edwards. I went awry. Eddie got hit in the face with the bat. It was an accident, but they turned it into an angle where he went online, kind of mixed kayfabe and reality, saying, like, I'm not apologizing for anything. Then he made a t-shirt about how he injured Eddie Edwards. And so that ramped up the feud and then got people talking, because some people bought into it and generally thought he was being an arsehole about injuring somebody. So it got them attention, and he did it in his own unique way. But yeah, since then, he, like, he's went further down the card. He's been in a tag team with Rich Swann, and maybe that's just not what he wants to do. He's even got his own promotion, Wrestling Revolver, so maybe he's wanting to do more stuff with that. And I was going to say, he's going to be looking for a lighter schedule, but Impact's got one of the lighter schedules you can probably get at the minute, and he said he was paid fairly well. So maybe it's a case of, he doesn't think there's anything left for him to do if he's not going to get back into the main event scene anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. It does look like he's done everything he can. He did, as you mentioned, flying the flag with Impact. I think the last big thing he did was facing Kenny Omega when Kenny Omega was champion. The two of them had a great match. Let's talk about Deanna Purrazzo. We touched on this a few weeks ago, her leaving possibly. That's a void that they cannot fill for me. I think, insert Pep Guardiola, we cannot replace him clip here, but I think she is the absolute best women's wrestler in any promotion in the world just now. I think she's absolutely sensational. I cannot speak highly of her. Her run as the Virtuosa, her run as the Champ Champ Challenge, the tag team of Vexed with Chelsea Green. Just everything about Deanna Purrazzo's Impact run has been great. And it just seems, at this point, she's there to put over Mickey. She's put over Trinity twice. She put over the recently returning Jordan Grace. She was on the losing side of the big 10 women tag team match that main evented part two of Impact 1000. It looks as if they're kind of getting as much as they can out of her on the way out the door. I think they know that she's not sticking around, and that's a bit of an upset, because I think certainly in the pandemic era, she has flown the flag and flown it proudly for Impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, because, you know, I think if everyone talked about releases earlier on, if everybody who got released initially in 2020, he was somebody that not enough people were talking about, because there were so many people who were like more recognizable names, or some people even probably forgot she was even there because she was used so rarely. So she's one of the names that people weren't really talking about, but she's one of the people who took the opportunity and made the most out of no longer being with WWE. And, you know, Impact used to have a bad reputation about building companies around people who just left WWE, but she's one of the most successful examples of it. She came in, reinvented, helped elevate the Knockouts division, had some of the best matches the Knockouts division's had in a way, and helped further reinforce the fact that Impact probably does have the best women's division of any company and has had done for at least the last 5 years. And, you know, sometimes as much as it's a pain in the arse to see companies pat themselves on the back so much as if they've been doing in the last couple of weeks on Impact 1000 praise and Knockouts, is very much well deserved considering what they were doing when they started that division and what WWE was doing with the woman at that same time. And I don't know if it means she's going to WWE or AEW or where she's going. Maybe she wants to be a more freelance thing, but I think her situation may also be a similar one to Sami Callihan, if that's the case, and that maybe she has done everything, because at a certain point she kind of has done. She's won everything she can do. She's come in defending titles from other promotions. So, and I think she's at an age where she can still, has plenty of time to do all sorts of other things. But yeah, it will take them some time to fill the void that will be left behind by Dawn if she does indeed like not come to any terms for a new deal.
Yep. From releases in WWE and Impact to a new signing in WWE, ESPN broke the story, an article from Mark Raimondi. Apologies, Mark, if I'm pronouncing your second name wrong there. I'm sure you're listening. They announced that Jade Cargill, a rising star in professional wrestling and former champion in All Elite Wrestling, has signed with WWE, promotion officials have told ESPN. Cargill, who was AEW's longest reigning TBS champion and appeared on AEW television as recently as 2 weeks ago, will start at the WWE Performance Center on Tuesday, according to officials. So it remains unclear if Cargill will go straight to the WWE main roster or if she'll first perform on his developmental brand, NXT. So, Scott, this coming Saturday, Tiffany Stratton versus Becky Lynch, Extreme Rules match. This coming Monday, the winner faces Tegan Knox for the NXT Championship. I know it says Tuesday, but do we see Jade Cargill appearing at either No Mercy on the Saturday or on Monday Night Raw to either confront Becky Lynch or cost her the title?
I definitely think she will be there Saturday. I think it would be interesting for them to do the whole, the classic thing they used to do at takeovers, like, oh, look, so-and-so is in the group, this person that we've just signed. I think it would be a case of taking advantage of it as soon as possible. And I know they want to already report to the Performance Center because she is still fairly inexperienced in terms of how long she's been in wrestling. And I think with AEW, the fact that she only wrestled maybe once a week or a couple of times a month, given the schedule of AEW, it means she didn't get enough chance to practice. It means she maybe didn't improve to the level that she should have during her TBS title run. I think if they don't rush into giving her a first match, have her go to the working in the PC, let her get up to date with how do we want her to work out their like style of wrestling, then I think you'll see a quick improvement in Jade Cargill. And I don't think they should rush into her first match. Maybe don't get involved with Becky, but maybe have a bit of a stare down at some point while she's in the crowd after the match, and, you know, just tease it out and don't rush into anything, because Jade's doing a few weeks of like segments on NXT before her first match, all the while she's training in the PC, she's doing live events. I think will help her, because I think that way you'll see a big improvement when she makes her debut in NXT compared to when you last seen her in AEW.
Yeah, something Kevin Nash said on his Click This podcast, and I mentioned it last week with John and David. he talked about getting reps in, and he mentioned that when guys came to WWE, they were doing one, they were doing four TV shows taped for a month's worth of TV, and then they would go and they would do a month's worth of shows where they would be on the road, you know, 25 out of 30 days that month doing house shows. So when a guy debuted, if he was a bit green, he had like 25 days of getting reps in before the next TV taping, and then you would see a massive improvement again because he had another 25 odd days wrestling and, you know, learning stuff. And that's something that Jade Cargill hasn't got. It hasn't been, not that she's bad, but, you know, I think when someone comes in that early stage, you do need, you know, a bit of protection, and you need to be doing house show matches. Maybe that's what they'll do. Maybe they'll have a slow burn. Maybe they'll have the stare downs. Maybe they'll have, you know, her just watching Becky at ringside. She has that star presence. She doesn't need to wrestle on TV. And then she has some house show matches. They do, I believe, three house shows a week. Maybe that's what she does. Maybe she goes to the house shows. Maybe she trains at the Performance Center with Shawn Michaels. Cody Rhodes is another one who's a very big proponent of her. Maybe we will see an improvement, as you mentioned, because there is the tools to improve there, whereas AEW, it is, here's weekly TV, sink or swim.
Yeah, and like you said, like, she wasn't necessarily bad, but I think the fact that, you know, it's called All Elite Wrestling, they imply that obviously the one people who are their absolute best in ring-wise, and a lot of people who are fans of work rate watch the promotion, so when they see anybody like her getting put to the position that she is, and she's like still moving a bit slower, people are very quick to kind of jump on her. She's 31 now, which isn't like too old in terms of wrestling, because, you know, people like DDP and Batista started in their 30s when they were training. So she started a bit later, but since she's still got plenty of time to develop, especially like you said, she's getting these reps in on the live events and with like the PC training. She's also not, she's even because she was wrestling so infrequently in AEW, she has wrestling experience, but she's not taking that many bumps that she's got any too much wear and tear just yet. So she's still got plenty of time to improve and have a hopefully a longer run in WWE, because I think outside of having dominant defenses with TBS, AEW failed to take advantage of her in terms of a storyline potential. Whereas if WWE wanted to put her in there with someone like Becky, like you said, right off the bat, they would already be doing her a lot better service than AEW was doing. And so I think there's definitely a lot more time to, like I said, do a slow burn and don't rush her into her first match.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about someone who we won't be seeing in a match anytime soon, and that's Sheamus, according to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Sheamus has seriously injured his shoulder. We've seen recently that Butch is down in NXT. He's been part of the NXT Heritage Cup series. He'll face Joe Coffey tonight in the finals of that for a shot at Noam Dar at this Saturday's No Mercy pay-per-view. A shame for Sheamus. A shame for shame. Because it seems every time he gets sort of a run going, WWE either fumble it, as he mentioned before, he didn't feel they took advantage of his popularity post-Clash at Castle, or he gets an injury or someone else comes into the frame, because it's just not clicked for him. There's been great matches, there's been banger after banger, but not as many as we hoped.
Yeah, it's the same, because after the Clash of the Castle, you had them in the War Games, everybody thought that maybe there was going to be them getting a shot at Roman Reigns for the Universal title, but nothing really came of it, and yeah, Brawl and Brutes again had just been floating around SmackDown. You know, they were basically charged with him putting over Pretty Deadly when they first got here. And they just get like Butch and Ridge Holland get brought out every so often just for a fill-in tag team match on an episode of SmackDown, but Sheamus doesn't get to do much like between like what he was doing last year and what he did with Edge recently in terms of, you know, having that match with Edge was the best thing he'd done in quite a while. The fact that they moved Gunther away from him brand-wise means he can't finish that story in terms of getting the IC title and completing the Grand Slam. And you do worry about Sheamus, because there was a thing a few years ago before the stuff with Drew McIntyre that they were worried about injuries catching up to him, but he seemed to have this great run. And now, given that he's in his 40s, you know, these injuries take longer to recover from. So you wonder how much more time does Sheamus have left in WWE. And it would be a shame if he didn't get to win the IC title before he wrapped it all up.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to see him eventually get that, would you call it? Get that in a kind of title run. It's the least he deserves. He's won everything else. He's been a great servant of the company. And yeah, it'd be nice to see him get that before he retires. Hopefully we see him back soon. So from someone dealing with an injury to someone who could be returning from injury at some point, that's the legend killer, Randy Orton. Randy Orton, spotted at the WWE Performance Center this past week, has been training for an in-ring return at the facility, according to bodyslam.net. For the past 3 weeks, Orton's tour bus has been a constant at the Performance Center in recent weeks. Scott, Randy Orton's last match was in May 2022, where him and Riddle dropped the Raw Tag Team Championships to the Usos. He's not been seen since. There's been talk that he's been advised to retire. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think we'll see him back anytime soon? Or is there a desire to see Randy Orton back with the news now that RK-Bro is no more with Riddle's release?
I think the thing with RK-Bro was Riddle needed that a lot more than Orton did. I mean, while it made Orton a lot more entertaining in terms of, like, it looked like Orton was enjoying himself, and when you can tell Orton's into something, it's a lot easier to watch because Orton will make sure that you all know when he's not into something and if he's bored or something. So as much as it benefited both of them, it was a lot more of a benefit to Riddle, because you saw in the first few minutes of Randy being out, he had that thing with Roman where he unsuccessfully challenged him for the title, you know, to try and get revenge for Randy. And then he had this feud with Seth, which had some of his best promo work and everything. But literally, as soon as the fight bit happened, it was like he was back to like pre-RK-Bro Riddle being quite annoying. He was trying to tag with Elias for a little bit. He was just jumping between bits. They had Kevin Owens openly talking about how annoying he found him when they just kept floating him in and out of the Bloodline storyline and getting beaten up on a weekly basis by either the Usos or by Solo Sikoa. And just, I think it was a case of they wanted to wait till Randy got back, but it became more apparent that the longer they realised Randy was going to be it for, the less they had for him. But I think Randy, given his name value and everything, you can kind of slot him back into pretty much anywhere on the card. You know, you can slot him back into the title picture if you wanted to, provide he's healthy enough, because I think it's a very serious injury, and the fact he's, you know, and he's also in his 40s, so this will take some time to further come back from him if he is at the Performance Centre. And I think the whole thing with Riddle's release, we didn't really touch on that much when we talked about the releases, but I think his is a lot more down to stuff in his personal life and less so the whole budget cuts thing or whatever reason is that he gives for their releases. A lot of people seem to think it was to do with the USC merger and the fact that he and Dana White don't get along, but I don't think that's really... I think it's just some people kind of reaching.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a reach. I think personal things, the rehab last year, rumours that he was intoxicated when he accused a TSA agent of sexual harassment. Although what I will say is I do hope the company took those claims seriously and did look into it before releasing him. But yeah, it does look like he might need to take some time away. Hopefully he is brought back. I would like to see one more RK-Bro run. I would like to see Randy Orton versus Riddle at some point. And I think there is still plenty of matches for Randy Orton to have. But if it's in his best interest to retire, I mean, we've seen just about everything we can from Randy Orton, haven't we? It'd be great to get a few more matches, but if he retires now, I don't think anyone will say, oh, that's a waste of a career. He's had a legendary career. Speaking of legendary, The Rock returned last week on SmackDown for a one-night appearance, which has been viewed over 103 million times. There was talk of WWE having a meeting lined up with The Rock about future creative ideas backstage as well. The West is reporting that there's currently talk of The Rock appearing at the Elimination Chamber event in Perth, Australia. It would be TKO's first large-scale international event, and they might want to give it a really big show. Adding to the speculation is the fact that WWE was recently sold to Endeavor. There's a strong suggestion that the company, which also owns UFC, wants its first WrestleMania in charge to be an absolute showstopper. As a result, there's talk that The Rock might very well wrestle in Perth at the Elimination Chamber in February on his way to WrestleMania to face Roman Reigns 2 months later. Scott, we talked about it last week. Rock v. Roman, it doesn't need the title. Will the title be on the line?
I really don't think you need to have Rock v. Roman at WrestleMania this year again. Like, the whole thing about the title, like, you booked yourself into a situation after the whole Cody thing, no, we're going to wait till next year, and then having The Rock come along, that would really, I think, piss off more people than it would, you know, cheer up. However, I think the stuff with The Rock in Perth is still just a rumour at this point, but it would be interesting, basically getting involved in this Bloodline thing. But it's weird, he comes back while the Bloodline's still in kind of disarray. They're doing the stuff we've seen at Fastlane. It feels weird that, oh yeah, The Rock's going to get involved, but not for like 3 or 4 more months. And you know, I wonder, like, are they even going to be able to get him next month? Because I think they're going to try tie him down now, because I know he's not busy as busy because of the SAG strike, but the strikes are over by then, and he's like, oh, I need to go film now. They're going to be able to say, no, we tied you down. You agreed to this while you were on strike. You said you'd just show up at this date, so get your arse over to Australia.
I think they will need to get him in just now. Also, rumours that The Rock has been recording has been doing voice recordings, easy for me to say. We'll re-record that about 8 times there. And scanning for the new WWE 2K24 game, rumours abound that he will be part of the showcase mode. The Rock is a draw. No ifs, ands, buts, or maybe. The Rock is someone who, you know, we saw the reaction when he came back. We saw the reaction when on social media, 103 million views. The Rock is someone who would be at a video game, be at a pay-per-view. He's going to bring an interest for WWE, and I think it's smart, as you said, tying The Rock down now while there's a SAG strike on, because it means we can get him to commit to a bit more than usual, because as soon as that SAG strike's over, there's going to be a backlog of stuff, and people are going to be demanding The Rock left, right, and centre. So get in there while the going's good. Otherwise, we might never get that Rock v. Roman match.
I think with the video game as well, I think there's not many people are saying that. I mean, I think with the video game, the whole thing about him potentially being the showcase, I think that came for the fact that he was also recording dialogue as well as being scanned. So I think some people kind of jumped on that one because he had Cena doing his bits that were interspliced with his showcase mode and going through the different moments of Cena's career. So probably wouldn't be out of the realms of possibility for that to be the case with The Rock this time around, and they did it with Rey Mysterio a few years earlier. They said a few other wrestlers were also recording dialogue, including the Judgment Day. I think the Judgment Day somewhere in the showcase or wherever, some sort of story mode, might play a big part in the game, given that they seem to be a big part of main roster TV at the minute, so it wouldn't be a realms of possibility for WWE to make a major push for them, or even have a Judgment Day like DLC pack with all the members in it.
Yeah, no, that'd be absolutely great. Be interesting to see if that comes to fruition. Great to see WWE taking that show to Perth, the Elimination Chamber, because, you know, with Puerto Rico, London getting the Money in the Bank, you know, you had Cardiff at Clash at the Castle, we've had the big Saudi shows, and now these big Australian shows. It's good that WWE are going worldwide, because we've seen it with places like AEW, you know, doing 2-for-1 specials on pay-per-views, because they're going to oversaturated markets. There's a demand to see wrestling in these places, and if you get in while the going's good, you can certainly make a lot of money. WWE making record profits consistently, so be interesting to see that. Right, Scott, our last 20 minutes.
I got in there, Russ, to say about this Perth show. One was the fact that Grayson Waller put a photo up about from his segment with John Cena at Money in the Bank, when shows in the UK, 0, but just shows in Australia, 1, and he put that all down to himself after that segment. But also, thanks to David Campbell, we know that apparently that show given the airs at like prime time and in Australia, and will be like on at like 6 a.m. in America or Eastern time, wherever it is, means it'll be on at 11 a.m. on the Saturday morning over here in the UK time.
What a lovely time for watching wrestling. A wee rolling sausage, cup of tea and the wrestling. You can't whack it. Enjoy getting up at 3 a.m. Americans. See how we fucking like it. Anyway, Scott, we've got three pay-per-views to look forward to. We've got two happening this weekend, which we'll go into more detail of. But we'll talk about Bound for Glory first. Bound for Glory 2023 coming your way from Cicero, Illinois, at the Cicero Stadium, October 21st, 2023. And Impact on Impact 1000 have announced some of the matches for the showcase pay-per-view of the Impact calendar. Alex Shelley versus Josh Alexander for the Impact World Championship has been made official. Mickey James will be taking on Trinity for the Knockouts Championship. Will Ospreay and Mike Bailey will finally take each other on one-on-one in a match that was meant to be at the Multiverse of Matches this past April. And they've announced that Kenta will be appearing at the show. The former New Japan Strong champion has not been announced an opponent yet, but Scott, who would you like to see Kenta take on and why?
I think I've heard rumours of somebody he might take on, but that's mainly because I've read the spoilers from the tape and that happened the other week, so I won't mention the name. If it wasn't already having a match with Ospreay, then I would say him versus Mike Bailey. Him be Jonathan Gresham, I think, could be cool. Him v Kushida in some sort of match could be really cool as well. They're both big in the junior heavyweight scene, obviously kind of wrestlers as a heavyweight. Literally anybody on the Impact roster right now could be a great match for Kent. Obviously, as well as the matches you've said, there's some matches we could kind of guess would happen. You know, after winning the tag title shot and Feast or Fired, you assume that ABC will finally get their rematch with the Rascals at Bound for Glory to try and get the revenge there. And I think also the annual Call Your Shot Gauntlet will be another thing we can expect to get announcements about soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about Impact 1000. Not as much of an action-packed show as the week before. However, there was... We'll not go into a lot of detail on this, but there was a nice moment for the Impact Originals. Eric Young, Scott D'Amore, Wildcat Chris Harris and James Storm winning an 8-man tag over the Design and Kenny King and Sheldon Jean. Just a nice wee moment for the Impact Originals there. And it was nice to see Chris Harris, who has retired through injury. He didn't look too clever in the last 5-on-5 match that he had in Impact last summer. He looked like he was moving a lot better and on the road to recovery. So that was good to see.
Yeah, definitely. Even though, as much as I appreciate what Chris Harris did with James Storm way back in the day, every time I watch him, I think, I can't not look at you and not think of that horrible segment on ECW from 2008. And I'm glad the Impact roster, I'm glad the Impact fans gave him a proper response so when he came out, because I remember when they tried to have him come back in 2011 with Matt Hardy against Beer Money, and the crowd, they had that face-off between him and James Storm, which may be a big moment. The crowd started shouting, "Knock, knock, who's there? Braden Walker."
Oh, God. Well, we talked about how not a lot happened. However, there was the fallout of Feast or Fired. Your winners of the briefcases were Crazy Steve, Moose, Chris Bay, and Yuta Mora. Crazy Steve opened his briefcase.
No T in his name, God damn it.
Shut up.
You're worse than Jack Graham trying to say Takeshita, honestly.
Anyway, take a shitter. Crazy Steve opened his briefcase to find a shot at the Digital Media Championship. He began shouting, "And all the world's a dreamers," obviously going after Tommy Dreamer, the current Digital Media Champion. Moose won a world championship shot, much to the chagrin of his partner Brian Myers. However, he couldn't hide his smugness. He was absolutely delighted by it. Ace and Bay finally will get their tag team title shots. They won the tag team Feast for Fired, which means Yuya is offski. He found the pink slip. He has been fired. It looks like he'll be returning to New Japan. And Joya is no more. Scott, I'm absolutely heartbroken.
As am I. I mean, the way they did this in this pre-recorded segment, like, yeah, I loved the how much Moose, like, oh yeah, obviously I would have rather this would this was a tag team title show, you know, so we could both benefit. And then immediately he turns away and he's got that big fucking smile on his face. And then the tenseness between Yuya, between Joya and Ace and Bay, you know, both wanting a tag title show and knowing it's between that and getting fired. And then they open Ace and Bay's case first, and then that they put the fact they edit in this dramatic, really sad music as Yuya both like, just look at each other as they both realise, like, oh God, they realise what this means and they have to go through the whole thing of opening it. And very, to really rub it in, it's in big orange letters with an exclamation mark, like, all cats, fire! Like, you don't have to rub it in, lads, honestly. And they're doing a big, like, goodbye ceremony or something for him later on. And I'm wondering if the sadness of seeing his best friend get taken away will start to see a change in Joe Hendry going forward.
Maybe the prestigious one could be back. Moose has a briefcase with a world title shot anytime, any place. He has cashed in on Josh Alexander at Bound for Glory before. Could we see it again? Could we see the tease? You know, we do have the Call Your Shot Battle Royal, so there will be challengers left, right and centre for the winner of Alex Shelley and Josh Alexander. Speaking of challengers, Alan Angels won the Ultimate X match on Impact 1000, and he's not waiting about. He's going to cash it in next week, this coming Thursday at time of recording. Alan Angels going up against new Impact X Division champion Chris Sabin for the X Division championship. Scott, I think this one's got Chris Sabin's successful title defence written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, the Alan Angels, always the rock star, he's the celestial. Like, pick a fucking lane, Alan. Like, pick a nickname and stick to it, because I've no idea what exactly he's maybe going for. But, you know, fair
enough. I just can't take him seriously, because I'm just thinking of the segment with The Rock and Al Snow. Al is the jabroni name. Who cares? Honestly, I mean, that match was an absolute train wreck, that X Division match. But when you've got Kalisto in there, let's not beat about the bush. It's not going to be great, is it? It certainly wasn't a... certainly wasn't a top three of the X Division matches, and we'll leave it at that.
I mean, they said that this was like the 50th Ultimate X match. I know the company's been around for 21 years, but that even tells me, Jesus, you've been really over relying on this fucking gimmick match over the years. And yeah, if you've done that many, some of them aren't going to be the best.
Yeah, absolutely right. So we will end with All Elite Wrestling's Wrestle Dream preview. It will be taking place October 1st in Seattle, Washington at the Climate Pledge Arena, a show in honour of Antonio Inoki on the anniversary of his death. But before we get to that, we'll talk NXT No Mercy, Bakersfield, California at the Mechanics Bank Arena, September 30th, this coming Saturday. Four matches on the card: Becky Lynch versus Tiffany Stratton in an Extreme Rules match, Bron Breakker, Baron Corbin in a singles match, Carmelo Hayes and Ilya Dragunov for the NXT Championship, and Noam Dar will take on the winner of tonight's match between Butch and Joe Coffey in the NXT Global Heritage Invitational. Butch topping his group with 5 points, Joe Coffey winning a tiebreaker with Nathan Fraser and Duke Hudson. Poor old Akira Tozawa, 0 points there. What match would you like to talk about first? Let's talk, will we go bad and then go good?
Yeah, why not?
Right, Bron Breakker, Baron Corbin. What the hell are they doing with Bron Breakker? We talked about Dolph Ziggler and missed opportunities. A Dolph Ziggler NXT title run as the veteran taking on all these young up-and-comers could have been great, and it did seem on the cards after WrestleMania 2022. Unfortunately, Bron Breakker wins the title back the next night on Raw because plans change. He then goes on a year-long run with the title. By the end of it, people are booing. They're cheering Carmelo Hayes, who's meant to be the heel. He's now a heel on NXT, and he's doing nothing. What is the point here? He should have been on the main roster over a year ago, and he's gotten stale while they're waiting for him in NXT.
Yeah, I mean, this is the story. Like, he was randomly feuding with Von Wagner, was Bron Breakker, where they tried to make Von Wagner's thing putting people through tables, which people finally seem to get behind because they just like someone putting people through tables. there's the then he Bron Breakker murdered Von Wagner by trying to keep his head in with steel steps. And what Baron Corbin was trying to say how much he appreciated seeing him try and murder a man. Then Bron Breakker said, "I don't need your respect, whatever." And then all of a sudden they said, "Fuck it, let's have a match." And people, I don't think people are going to care really about either of them, but they might care a little bit more about Braun because people like seeing Braun spear people because the longer Braun's in NXT, especially as a heel, he seems to be turning more so, less so into his dad and more so into fucking Bill Goldberg.
Given the Gable Stevenson Baron Corbin match, I think they might get behind Baron Corbin a bit more. But that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about the great. We've already seen Ilya and Carmelo Hayes have a championship match. It was absolutely brutal. Brutal, dragged down, just absolute straight up fight between Carmelo Hayes and Ilya Dragunov. I know Carmelo Hayes is only 5 months into his title run. I would love Ilya Dragunov to win here. You know, have him win by like knockout or something like that. You know, the Ivan Drago taking down Carmelo Hayes, taking down the fighting champion. He doesn't go down. He tries to get up and he eventually passes out for the pain. I'd love to see them have Ilya win here and then Carmelo comes back in a few months, revitalize, and they have the third match in the trilogy because it's been... The last match was great, but I'd love to see Ilya Dragunov get a run with the title. He's just an absolutely brutal human being and I love watching him kick people's heads in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took a while for him to really get going in like US NXT after he's won his NXT UK champion, having to vacate that title. Everything they came in as part of that triple threat Halloween Havoc last year. But you know, after the stuff with Dijak and then the previous match with Carmelo, I think a lot of people who watch NXT probably would buy him as champion. But I don't just want Ilya to win because of, you know, selfish draft reasons, but also because, you know, Carmelo has had a solid run of like great matches, not just on NXT specials, but on like special episodes of NXT TV, like Heatwave and things like that, against like likes of Wesley and Grayson Waller. So he's done a lot in that time. He's appeared on Raw as champion, fought the Judgment Day. And I think he's been main roster ready for quite a while now. And you can say that he had a decent length title reign now. And I can see this ending one of two ways in terms of Ilya winning. Either Trick Williams accidentally cost Carmelo because he's tried to go out on his own, tried to fight Ilya and end up getting battered as a result. And Carmelo seems hesitant to have Trick by his side because he wants to do it on his own, so Trick could accidentally cost Carmelo the title because he technically did help him win it, so him getting involved in losing it would be kind of a good like symmetry. Or Ilya just beats him down mercilessly until the match is stopped, or he pretty much knocks Carmelo out, and you know, the commentators say, "Oh well, on this night Ilya Dragunov showed no mercy to Carmelo Hayes." Because that used to be a thing back in the day. That used to be the thing back in the day, like everybody, at least one person in a feed leading into a No Mercy, had to see the name of the show, "I will show you no mercy." Or, "After this pay-per-view, there will be no forgiving me after what I do to you at Unforgiven."
And yeah, when I kick you in the nuts, you'll have great balls of fire. Stuff like that. I get what you're trying to put across there. Ilya Dragunov, I'm going for. Do you think Carmelo retain, or are you going for Ilya?
No, I'm going for Ilya.
Ilya. Becky Lynch and Tiffany Stratton in an Extreme Rules match for the NXT Women's Championship. This match seems a bit overshadowed at the minute, given what we know about the Tegan Knox match next week and the news today that Jade Cargill has signed with WWE. However, these two did have a good match on NXT a few weeks ago. Tiffany has been wrestling dark matches. It looks like she's ready to go up to the main roster. What are your thoughts on this match? Do you see any hope where Tiffany Stratton retains, or do you see this being the end of the feud and Tiffany moves on to the main roster?
I've only seen parts of like their first match, but there are people who seem to like it and thought Tiffany looked good and defeat some of people who didn't like the way she was treated when she lost the belt. I'm thinking this one is going to be like a longer showcase for Tiffany Stratton, help her kind of get over and defeat before she inevitably gets called up, because we really have seen significant improvement in her this past year. I remember when Becky was coming to NXT, I was surprised they didn't just hold off until like this show to have Becky win the title. But when you see the numbers that NXT's been pulling in, especially when Becky's been on screen, you can see why they want to do it on TV. I do see Becky coming out the winner of this one, because I think they need to have her as champion for a little longer before they build her up in the new year to fight Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania, if the plans for that are anything to go by. The stuff with Tegan is interesting, because I think Becky will win, but Becky won't lose immediately to Tegan, because there was a report going around saying before last night's Raw, the Tegan story starts tonight. So I think this thing with Tegan might be an ongoing thing before she eventually takes the belt from Becky. And if not Tegan, I think the person to take it might be Lyra or Valkyria, because they've been teasing. They both had a partnership recently on NXT, because, you know, they're both Irish. It makes sense in WWE's eyes. So it's either going to be Tegan or Lyra that takes the belt from Becky, in my opinion.
That's fair enough. We would have had a North American title match to discuss had Ali not been released, so we can't really talk about that now. Noam Dar will take on, as we mentioned, one of Butch or Joe Coffey. Either a rematch of their match on NXT UK for the NXT UK Championship, which Butch formerly Pete Dunne won, or an ICW reunion, easy for me to say, with Joe Coffey going up against Noam Dar. We'll talk about that more next week when we know what the actual match itself is. Right. Let's talk about AEW Wrestle Dream. Scott, there's 9 matches announced for this show. There is 3 AEW shows between now and then. I look forward to another 12 matches being added. Let's just go through the card. Bryan Danielson going up against Zack Sabre Jr. Hangman Adam Page going up against Swerve Strickland. FTR defending the AEW World Tag Team Championships against the Aussie Open. Better Than You Baby, Adam Cole and MGF taking on the Righteous of Vincent and Dutch, defending their Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships. 6-man tag team action with Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi going up against the Don Callis family of Takeshita, Guevara and Ospreay. Christian Cage, the new AEW TNT champion, defending the title against Darby Allin. Eddie Kingston defending his newly won Ring of Honor World Championship and his strong Openweight Championship against Shibata. Chris Statlander taking on Julia Hart for the AEW TBS Championship and a Fatal 4-Way number one contendership match. The Young Bucks, The Guns, The Lucha Bros, Orange Cassidy and Hook. The winner gets a future AEW World Tag Team Championship shot and breathe. What would you like to talk about first, Scott?
Before I choose a match, I want to talk about something that came out recently. Apparently, despite I think it being somewhere in the region of 17,000, depending on how you set up the staging and everything for the venue, there's only been like 5,000 or so tickets sold for this, which means it might be the lowest bought, like lowest attended show since like the COVID pandemic, which maybe is again in terms of like burnout, maybe in terms of shows, because only a month and a half after this, or even a little bit less than that, they have full gear. But out of all the matches here, the one I invested in because I want a specific side to win as the AEW World Tag Team title match, because I want Aussie Open to win. I wanted them to win the World Tag League last year and go in and take the IWGP titles from FTR after their initial loss back at Royal Quest, which is why they're doing this, because Royal Quest, which was exactly a year on from this, is when they found out that Inoki had died. So 1 year later they're running it back, this tag team title match. And you know, if they're properly signing, you want to do something with them, put those belts on Aussie Open.
Excuse me, but as the biggest FTR mark in this pod, and as someone who has them on the draft team, that's Saturday Draft Live, if you want to listen this coming Saturday, at Suplex Retweet, I find your want for Aussie Open to win offensive. FTR have been absolutely sensational recently. The match with the Young Bucks, their open challenges on Collision, Dax Hardwood recently saying, people have been asking me, why are we facing quote-unquote nobody tag teams? These tag teams will be the tag teams when FTR are no longer here. They need the opportunity now, which I thought was a nice touch. Sorry, you go.
I mean, that was a sentiment that they said to Aussie Open before their first match back at Royal Quest. They said, you guys are one of the best tag teams in the world, but there's a reason you're not the best tag team in the world, and that's because we're still around. And so that's why I always thought they were going to have that rematch for the IWGP tag titles, because that would be like, okay, they didn't get it the first time, but this time they have done it, so now they can maybe say that they're the best tag team. which is why I think they're going to win here. Which also, interestingly, if they win the titles here, and just under a calendar year, Aussie Open could say that they've held the IWGP Heavyweight, NJPW Strong Openweight titles, Ring of Honor Tag Team titles, and the AEW Tag Team titles in all of the same calendar year.
Wrestled on pay-per-views in this past calendar year, and in title matches in Impact, AEW, Ring of Honor, and New Japan, been on an absolute tear, so they have. Let's talk about from the AEW World Tag Team titles to the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles. Better Than You Baby, Adam Cole and MGF. They've had a successful title defense already against the Dark Order. Another one coming up against Vincent and Dutch. I think people thought the breakup was going to come right after... Wembley, you know, Adam Cole would either attack him in frustration or cheat to win, and that would lead to the breakup of the team. But no, that's two pay-per-views in a row, Adam Cole and MGF defending the titles. How long do you think this is going on for before we get the eventual turn in Adam Cole versus MGF Part 3?
I know a lot of people were kind of weren't sure why they were fighting the rights as well. People, it seemed like an easy win for them. You know, again, as someone who has Adam Cole as his captain, and going back to SDL here, I'm happy for another easy win, like when they beat the Dark Order quite easily back at All Out. But it seems weird that they've had two opportunities to put them against the kind of which seems what they're teasing, and they just haven't done it. Like, we'll be against the team that's fighting the Ring of Honor, just not the team that you're currently technically feuding with on TV, which is weird. And at this point, I think the best way to do the breakup is to tie it back into the whole Bidding War 2024. Like, let it have it come to the end of the year, and either MJF betrays Cole because he's leaving everything behind, or Adam Cole gets angry at MJF, thinking that, because maybe have MJF tease that he's going to go and take the money and take the belt with him, and Adam Cole maybe gets angry because he feels like his best friend's choosing the money and choosing to like abandon him to go elsewhere, and that's what eventually causes the breakup. Because other than Wembley, I think the whole contract thing, because I think we all knew that the minute he talked about the bidding war when he won the title, that was going to be a big talking point in terms of him losing the belt. I think you've got a real opportunity to tell a great story here to wrap up that angle that you've been talking about, and this great Better Than You Baby story.
I need to beat you, Maxwell. I need to beat you more than anything else in the world. Take Roddy Strong out of the equation. Bam, he's not a factor.
I mean, can you imagine he beat... They have like a match of like winners coming like the last time in 2023. Him and Cole have another match. MJF wins. Looks at Toy Khan, does a CM Punk, does a kiss, and jumps over the barricade.
Oh, you tease me. Anyway, let's talk about Hangman Adam Page against Swerve Strickland. Adam Page lost a lot of steam in the AEW title run he had. He's not the most interesting character. I think a lot of the support he's been getting is because, you know, CM Punk's kind of unfairly took a few pops. Well, and not so much unfairly, he's took some pops at him publicly. You know, it's like Marge Simpson. Yeah, he doesn't have to say it. Going up against Swerve Strickland. Swerve absolutely schooling Hangman Adam Page on the promos in this. Swerve saying to Hangman, if I had half the opportunities you did, I'd already be the first black AEW world champion, which I absolutely loved that line. Also part of this feud, Mogul Embassy, which is Swerve Strickland's stable, were the six-man tag team champions. Hangman Adam Page and the Bucks have defeated them for those titles. So Hangman Adam Page and the Young Bucks are the new Ring of Honor Trios champions. Just a wee side quest in that feud. I can't help, I know he's the heel, but I can't help root for Swerve here. Swerve isn't lying with anything he said, you know. Punk might have been out of line with what he said, but he wasn't lying. Adam Page is lazy. He is. He's getting lazy. He's enjoying a cushy contract. As Page said, as Strickland said, you've certainly been eating well, I say here with the body of a bronze Adonis. But yeah, I can't help but root for Swerve here. He's just so much more charismatic and so much more interesting.
I know. That's the same with most stories nowadays. The villains are always more interested. I think the thing with the Punk is, it's that old, you know, tactic people say when somebody's being an arsehole to you, like, don't rise to, don't lower yourself to their level, because if you don't say anything back and they keep, you know, being a dick to you, everyone will see them as the dick, and see you in the right. And that's what Hangman's done. He's not said anything. He's not that kind of person to cause a fuss or like cause drama. And so by not saying anything, he's made himself look like the good guy, CM Punk look like the arsehole, which in most cases, unfortunately for Punk, he does seem like the arsehole. But then again, Hangman was starting to not be as interested even during his title run. And since losing the title, he's not really had much to do, which is probably why they put him back with the Elite when they did. And of course, obviously, Brian Cage and Outlaw six-man belts, because that's what the embassy's there for. They're there to take the fall to Swerve's enemies, it seems. And I've been a fan of Swerve for a long time. Like, I'd heard about him on the indies, but he came into NXT. I quickly became a fan of him when he was Isaiah Swerve Scott. And just the charisma he showcased, not just in promo, but just in general. And I was kind of disappointed when he didn't go much further on the main roster. Yeah, there was some weirdness with the whole makeshift tag team with Keith Lee, but in this recent run, especially like since the stuff with Orange Cassidy, the international title, stuff with Darby Allin here, and then Hangman Page, it really feels like Swerve is just going from strength to strength, and hopefully this helps elevate him up the card, because if anyone's going to be the first Black World Champion, it really should be him. And if Page does beat him at some point, I hope it does in a way that helps actually reignite interest in Paige, because I don't know if I've been interested in Paige since that first, like, since that match back at Revolution with Moxley in the Texas Death Match, because at least that had a bit of an edge to it. But if anything, I think this might be just the first of a couple of matches. Like, they'll have, like, maybe Swerve one here, and then Hangman will get the rematch at, like, Full Gear or something.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about two recently won titles that will be defended on night. Christian Cage recently winning the TNT Championship in a triple threat match with Luchasaurus and Darby Allin. He'll take on Darby Allin at the event. Champion vs. Champion, New Japan Strong Champion, Eddie Kingston going up against Cesaro at AEW Grand Slam. Kingston winning both belts. He's defending both titles against Shibata. I think this points straight to a Darby Allin win, because Luchasaurus is eventually out of the way. Christian Cage has to do it on his own. But I don't see a hope in hell that Eddie Kingston drops the title anytime soon, especially with the news that he's recently cancelled all his indie dates, because he feels that wrestling for New Japan, wrestling for Ring of Honor, and wrestling for AEW is too much of a commitment, and rightfully so. I can't blame him there. I don't like having one job, let alone three. Thoughts on the TNT title match and thoughts on the Ring of Honor New Japan Strongman?
I don't know what you're talking about, nearly won TNT title. You know, if you believe Christian's logic, Christian's been the TNT champion all along. So I don't know where you're getting these from.
The champion behind the champion.
Right. But yeah, I think this is the whole thing of, like, Christian keeps, like, made the triple threat match cost, which led to him basically stealing the belt from Luchasaurus, and then obviously now that it's on him, Darby winning it from him would be the thing that ends the partnership between the two, and has Luchasaurus basically murder Christian Cage afterwards, which will probably get a big pop. Because obviously, you know, Luchasaurus managed to beat Darby Allin, but it was Christian Cage that failed, so clearly it's not Luchasaurus, it's the loose end in that partnership when they both look at it.
Is Luchasaurus' dad dead? I'm just thinking.
I mean, the dinosaur, his dad's been dead for like 60 odd million years. But, you know, Christian could go and annoy someone else's dad, say, like Nick Wayne or whoever. But on the Eddie Kingston side, I think Eddie's just wanting to have this match because I think, again, he just loves Japanese wrestling. He probably respects Shibata, so he wants to have this match against him. Shibata's still got the pure championship in Ring of Honor, so he's probably not going to be affected too much by the loss. You know, I think they want Eddie to have a strong run with both belts. I believe he's scheduled as Eddie to defend that New Japan belt in at the end of October in Samstown for New Japan's Fighting Spirit Unleashed in Las Vegas. I believe him versus Hanari of the United Empire factions may be a match based on something that happened between the two during the G1. And then also he'll probably defend the belt across Ring of Honor TV leading into Final Battle. So you might not see him on AEW TV, but you might see him on like Rampage or something like that, or on Ring of Honor defending both those belts, which is still good for Eddie Kingston because it means he's regularly competing. And he's got two belts, maybe not be AEW belts, but he's got two like major companies' belts, which is more than anything like some of these other feuds did. Like, oh, Eddie Kingston will definitely get elevated by this feud with Chris Jericho. Like, no, if anything, it makes you care even less about Eddie Kingston.
Yeah, I agree. That seems to be the trend with Chris Jericho feuds. We'll go into more detail about the other matches next week when we review the show, but let's talk about what will potentially be the main event, the Dream Match, and it's been billed just as that. Bryan Danielson going up against the New Japan Television Champion, Zack Sabre Jr., in a non-title match. This was a match meant to be scheduled for the original Forbidden Door pay-per-view back in 2022. However, Brian was injured at the time, but it's great that we finally get to see this match, because I think it's been made clear recently, Brian is winding down as a full-time competitor, and we want to get these matches done as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely an argument to be made that this should be the main event, much like how he and Okada was the main event of the Forbidden Door. You know, if a match is like the first match announced for a major show, chances are it's the main event, whether or not it's a for a world title or anything. If it's the first match you announce, it means it's the match you probably have most, if not the most, like emphasis on. So it probably will be the main event. If Brian's on his way out, then he should be putting people over. I think he did win that initial contest between the two way back in like 2008, 2009. So I think Zach, to show his improvement, should win the match. And it's going to be a busy month for Zach, because like a week later, he's probably going to main event Royal Quest for New Japan in London, because they've already announced his match there. It's going to be him versus Will Ospreay for the IWGP UK title. So Zach's got two big pay-per-view main events back-to-back there.
Yeah, absolutely. A busy month indeed. But it is good that this is a proper Forbidden Door style pay-per-view. There is people from both companies. It's not just kind of the last Forbidden Door to me felt like AEW and Friends sort of thing. Like there was one or two New Japan guys, but there wasn't that many. But yeah, I'm glad that it does feel like a proper pay-per-view while still continuing storylines as well. It's not just, we have the Dream Match, it has its place, we all want to see it, but at the same time, there are still stories with Aussie Open going up against FTR again, with Swerve versus Hangman, you know, the continued feud of Callis Family going up against Kenny Omega, and now Chris Jericho's been weaved into that, because of course, why wouldn't he be? He finds a way to insert himself into everything. But that is going to do it.
I'm sure you're probably thinking of a big question. While you think of that, I was going to say about the Callis Family thing. Like, they teased that a few weeks ago that, oh, we've got our next target for Takeshita, and it's going to be Kota Ibushi, because he's going to take out Ibushi to get to Kenny Omega. And I thought that was going to be a match at WrestleDream, and I was really looking forward to that. And then they announced a six-man tag, and I know a lot of people were annoyed about a six-man tag instead of a singles when we were at Wembley. And weirdly enough, I'm more annoyed about a singles match being changed to a six-man at a show I'm not even going to be anywhere near than the one I'm going to be at. And I don't know why that is, but I'm annoyed this has kind of made a six-man tag despite the talent involved in it. But a wee bit of interesting news here. AEW seemingly doing a bit of a deal with DDT, because a couple of days ago there was a show for DDT where Don Callis accompanied Takeshita. He was in his corner for a victory against, I think, Mal was the name of the wrestler he defeated. And then after the match, the lights went out and Jericho appeared on the screen. So Jericho and Takeshita are going to have a match in DDT on the 12th of November.
That is quite cool. Yeah, it's quite cool to see the intertwining. And not just the same guys, you know, it is nice to see Chris Jericho back in Japan. But we had a big question last week. Last week we did the best moments in Impact history. This week we're talking about the worst of the worst from Impact Wrestling. You know, we've done the best, we need to do the worst. That's the rule. David Hockney saying, the worst for me has to be the Jeff Hardy Sting debacle at Victory Road 2011. Jeff should not have been anywhere near the ring given his intoxicated state. It's a moment that will live in infamy, particularly given the responses from Sting, Bischoff and the company as a whole. Might be a bit of a cop-out, but my least favourite star was Dixie Carter. Her on-screen presence was unbearable, and backstage rumours are to be believed. It sounds like she's a nightmare to work with. Stephen Wilson said, the zero pop moment when Tito Ortiz appeared during the Aces and Eights main event Mafia feud always stands out to me. Also, there was something very unlikable about Wes Briscoe. John Isherwood said, Dixie was a horrendous character. Jeff, Sting and Hogan Eric taking away the six-sided ring removed the special factor for me at the time. Alan Lucas saying, worst moment for me is when the company stopped being called TNA and the show was called Impact, like John mentioned. The removal of the six-sided ring is a low light for me. Worst superstar would be Garrett Bischoff. During the Aces and Eights storyline, he reminded me of Roderick Strong. Lack of charisma, wouldn't even notice if he was missing and just looked desperate to be part of the gang. David Campbell saying, the Dixie Carter and AJ Styles affair storyline was as low as the company's been. Least favourite Impact superstar was Ric Flair, added nothing in his time there and immediately undid a brilliant retirement. Sarah Greaves said, well, after watching back from like 2000 odd, my least favourite moments are the puppet, the midget killer, Lacey Von Erich couldn't even do the claw hold properly. who could forget big fat oily guy, greased up diff guy? So what's
that? Good?
Karen Jarrett versus Velvet Sky and RVD and Abyss. Don't get me started. It was just bad. The whole title fiasco that entailed from it was just not good. Anthony Fitzpatrick said, "It's Tito Ortiz and the crowd goes mild." Also, turning the angles, getting divorced into a storyline was very poor taste, I agree. The day Hulk Hogan arrived answers both questions, says Adam Callier. All great shouts, I think. But for me, watching recently, the worst thing has been having to watch PCO wrestle. No, it's not even, not anywhere near close to the worst. I think that whole Hogan and Bischoff era, thank God for Don Callis and Scott D'Amore, because I know Alan doesn't like the fact that it's now called Impact, but I think there was too much stink on that TNA name. Mm-hmm. And people still call it TNA anyway, but Impact was a rebranding after the whole Global Force TNA fiasco, so it was nice to get a new, fresh start. And from 2020 onwards, yes, we've criticised Bully Ray and PCO, but other than that, there's not actually been that much to moan about, and it has been pretty great. Right, big question this week.
Down
you go.
I think for me, in terms of moments, like a couple of my worst moments, like you talk about the Garrett Bischoff thing, wanting to be part of the guy, that pretty much sums up his dad's whole time as part of the NWO. But for me, two of my worst moments probably involved Dixie Carter. One, the final shot of Hulk Hogan Impact being her hauling onto his leg, begging him not to go, while everyone else was probably at home thinking, no, let him go.
Yeah, let him go.
Anything with Brooke Hogan involved, that whole storyline, which you got involved in Ace and Eights, but also, like you said, the Claire Lynch stuff went on for far too long. And one of the funniest bits of info behind the scenes about that was from Christopher Daniels in a shoot interview that he and Kazarian did after not long after they left TNA in 2013, where basically they said they were between two actresses to play Claire Lynch. So we needed somebody who looked a little bit like Dixie to believe would be our niece. And apparently they chose the actress to play Claire Lynch because, quote, she was the less attractive one because they didn't want anybody playing Dixie's niece that was more attractive than she was, which is a fucking low bar.
That is an absolute farce. For me, worst moment in the 2010 era, certainly. And listen, I'll give Hogan and Bischoff some credit, putting a weight limit on the X Division title to stop the likes of Abyss stealing it. Giving the option C was a Hogan-Bischoff thing. Bringing back Lethal Lockdown, I thought was quite good as well. And I mentioned, I think I've talked to you about this before, after Jeff Hardy won the title from Austin Aries in 2012, he couldn't go to the UK and defend the title. Hogan was a big proponent of Christopher Daniels winning the title, which unfortunately eventually didn't happen, but he pushed for Christopher Daniels to win the title, defend it. Defend it in the UK and then lose it back to Jeff when they came back to the States. So I'll give them credit for that. But the removal of the four-sided ring, the Nasty Boys being back, they were just absolutely tragic.
Really and tragic Scott when they're in their prime.
Yeah, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, and X-Pac as the band. Kevin Nash still had a tiny bit to offer. His knees were clearly going at the time. But, yeah, X-Pac and Hall, just much like Jeff Hardy when he had his demons, they didn't belong anywhere near a wrestling ring at that time. And it was absolutely tragic.
You know who, Matthew? I'll throw in someone else for our least favourite. He was tied up in the whole Global Force Gold thing as well, that horrible era. When they brought in Alberto El Patron, this is, again, another period of, anyone who's been released from WWE could come in, because he got tied up in a lot of real-life scandals during that time. And so that happened over that time. He unified both the world and the TNA world and bloody GFW belts, and then because there was so much legal scandal around him, they did a big block, and this was going to do major like months worth of tapings at once, or a couple of days. They had to edit most of the stuff with their world champion out of their TV show because of his real life legal drama. That's how bad things got when he went there. So already a bad time. A guy comes in and brings up even more negative press that they didn't fucking need.
Yeah, thank God Dixie Carter's away. Thank God Jeff Jarrett, I think he has a place in backstage in wrestling promotions, but he certainly shouldn't be the guy anymore. From his Reign of Terror to the Global Force fiasco, it's stay away from the booking, Jeff. Our big question this week will be simple. It will be posted on Monday, and it will be simple. What was your match of the weekend? Wrestle Dream and NXT is taking place. Was your match or moment if Jade Cargill shows up? Because I think that will be a talking point for sure. Thank you very much, Scott, for joining us. We'll be back next week reviewing Wrestle Dream, reviewing No Mercy, reviewing Tegan Knox, potentially being the new NXT Women's Champion, and much, much more in the crazy world of wrestling. If you want to keep up to date with us, we are at Suplex Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, we're on it. And for previews, reviews, interviews, and all the news, you can find us Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet, Android, iTunes, and all and Spotify. Thank you very much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.